What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of comics that come out this week. And yes, folks, comics still come out despite everything. Nothing can stop the comics.
Comics come out, but we don't come out of our apartments and homes because we're not supposed to.
Nope. We are definitely not doing this one in person, but we are feeling very personable about this collection of comics we're going to be talking about today, including Spider-Man number one from Marvel Comics, written by Carla Pacheco and art by Per Perez.
Spider-Woman.
Did I say Spider-Man?
Yes.
Yes, you did.
Oh, my God.
I was like, wow, deep cut, Alex. Okay, let's get into it.
By Todd McFarlane. All right, let's talk. Definitely my fault, particularly because I really like this issue a lot, so I feel real bad about that. This is a new start for Spider-Woman. She is attending a birthday party, and things go horribly wrong. How'd you feel about this one?
This was so fun. It's so extreme. I love that we sort of get thrown into the action. She, Spider-Woman's acting odd and feels a little sick. We don't know. And then she does a bunch of like wild, fucked up things, throws a car into a boat, which was cool. And then we get that story ends and we get sort of the backstory that led us up to that from connecting the past continuity to this one. And I thought that was awesome.
Yeah. I really like the setup. I loved her tone. The person who's writing this is so fresh and feels so new. It's a great number one. Like, I loved how she throws that kid at the bad guy. Oh, it was just so great. So great.
Yeah, it was super fun, and it got deep, and it got to a very dark place by the end that was interesting. Like you mentioned, I love the stuff of the backup story that really teases some bigger things that are potentially going to be going on. This is a fun beginning, and I'm definitely on board. Also, how do you feel about the new Spider-Woman costume?
That's what I was just going to say. I like it a lot. I like it better, actually.
Mm. Oh, wow.
I know the old costume is sort of the iconic look, but this feels suddenly, it feels both more like connected to the Spider family, Spider universe, but also new and has a little edge to it.
Yeah. I agree. All right, next one to talk about. This is from Boom Studios, Firefly number 15, written by Greg Pak and illustrated by Lalit Kumar Sharma. We have been loving this title here on the show. It has been super fun. Long. Mal has become sheriff of a small planet. He has been working for Blue Sun, and I always blank on the name of this, but essentially like the Federation or the Confederacy or whatever it is that rules all the planets. So he feels like he's betraying his morals a little bit, but he's also finally getting time to romance Inara the way that he wants to. This is great. This continues to just be so, so good.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with this new Firefly run with Greg Pak at the helm. I love how we're spending time with different characters and it's not all over the place. I've been really impressed with this and the character development.
You're like a Pak man. You're just wandering around the world, eating up little different comic books, like pellets.
I see what you've done there.
No, I get what you're getting at.
Really left me hanging there, guys. I like this
not
a lot
interested.
Too.
No, thanks.
No thanks. Not interested.
Yeah, no thanks. Thank you, but no thank you.
What I love about this is there are a ton of comic books now that take a licensed property and sort of extend the continuity. It was a big thing with Buffy, with X-Files did it, like a couple other shows. What I like about this is Greg Pak is doing is really taking the character and extending the character development, which I don't think happens as much in the other books. Those other books extend the plot. And the idea of making Mal a sheriff, part of the law, like really activates so many parts of his character and puts him in such an interesting place. It's so smart. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's great.
Next one to talk about, this is a big one, Robin 80th Anniversary 100-page Super Robin. Spectacular by... Written by Mark Wolfman, Chuck Dixon, Devin Grayson, Tim Seeley and Tom King, Judd Wittick, Adam Beechin, James Tynion IV, Amy Wolfram, Peter J. Tomasi, Robbie Thompson, art by Tom Grummett, Scott McDaniel, Dan Jurgens, Michael Janine, Dustin Nguyen, Freddie E. Williams II, Javier Fernandez, Damian Scott, Jorge Jimenez, and Raymond Villalobos. This is like the rest of these early 80th anniversary specials and anthology format, the thing that I thought was particularly cool about this one is they got old teams together to tell stories that were like vintage Robin stories.
Yes.
And I think this might have been my absolute favorite of all the 80th spectaculars.
Wow. I 100% agree. I was going to say the exact same thing. This one is so well put together. They picked up teams from different era, and each team that really had a defining run on a certain era of the particular Robin, and had them come back to tell a story. It was a lot about smart takes on the moments in the different Robins' lives that I thought was great. Man, I just loved almost every story in here was excellent.
Yeah, it was really impressive. Usually with a collection, there's some hit or miss stuff, but this was really top to bottom well done. A lot of amazing stories. It's great to see people come back and still kill it just like they did on their runs. I was really impressed with this.
The Dick Grayson Agent 37 story was
That was the one that I was going to call out to.
Oh, so good. I love that. I love Dick Grayson. I love the Agent 37 era. It felt like such a smart way to do it, have Dick Grayson still be in the universe, but not have to be being Nightwing or in the Bat family. And man, this story was just perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one was really good. I really like the James Tynan story as well, that served almost as a prelude to his run on Detective Comics. The Super Son story was fun as well.
Yeah, it was.
But even the earlier stories, too. I like the Stephanie Brown story. I like the Damian story. They were just great. I feel like the first two for me were my least favorite only because it was not an era that I knew quite as well, where I was like, okay, this is good, this is good. But by the time they hit the third story, that was the point where I was like, yes, I get this. I know these Robins. These are so, so good. And all of the characters, it's so funny because they look so similar, but they're all so different, and everybody just nailed their different characters across the board.
The Jason Todd story by Judd Winnick and Dustin Nguyen is so good also, like truly heartbreaking. And it really was, Jason Todd sort of gets the bad vibes. I feel like he's not, very few people are like, my favorite Robin, Jason Todd, the Red Hood, because he's like the bad one, the bad boy. This story was so smartly done to make you really feel for him when he's the young Robin, and then see it reflected in the way he is now. Just, it brought me to tears. And, you know, Judd Winnick doesn't write a lot of comics anymore, and this story was excellent.
Yeah. Great stuff. Moving on to another one from Image Comics, Undiscovered Country number 5, written by Scott Snyder and Charles Soule, art by Giuseppe Camicoli and Leonardo Marcello Grassi. This is taking place in a future society where America has been walled off as a couple of adventurers from outside have discovered things have gone biznockers inside America. There are several walls that are leading to deeper and deeper paths through America. And here we're still in the first section of America where they're battling a creature, a thing called the Destiny Man, and slowly working their way inside to try to get through the first wall. I say this every issue, but I cannot believe how much I do not understand what's going on. It gives me chills to read at the same time.
Well, what I love about this is that we're a couple weeks away from this, so it's nice to sort of get a preview of how the world's going to be.
Come on, guy.
I met the Destiny Man today. I'm telling you.
I rode a whale. I rode a whale.
Yeah, I saw you. Oh, so cool.
This is... keeps getting creepier and creepier, but it's done in such a way where you don't care, you don't know what's going on. It's very impressive that they can pull this off for so long. And I think the fact that two people are writing this really helps this, because they've really come at a lot of different angles to keep us entertained and moving forward in a way that's not like, I'm sick of this. So I'm really impressed with this.
I have a question for you.
The art is just phenomenal.
Great art, agreed. I have a question for you, Pete. When you say it gets creepier and creepier, do you mean the mystery? I don't know what you use the word creepier a lot, and I'm curious what you mean.
Well, in this, the transportation keeps getting creepier and creepier, but also, like, the more we know about the main character also gets creepier and creepier, or the guy who's pinning different antlers on himself. So it's like, that's what I mean by creepy.
Got you. Yeah, I like this a lot too. I agree with you, Alex. I don't quite know what the whole story is. There's so much going on that it's hard to hold it all in your brain at any time. But it is good, and it's the back matter that that Charles and Scott write at the end about just their process and how they are developing the book. And this one was about them taking meetings in Hollywood to develop this for as a feature film, are really interesting as well.
I'm a little worried that it's going to be revealed, because sometimes when a series ends, like, it reveals, oh, it was just a crazy person in an insane asylum the whole time. You know, I'm worried it's just going to kind of like zoom out, and it's going to just be Trump's hair.
Okay, let's just reveal your work here. How about name five series that do that?
It's going to be in a snow globe, Alex. A ton of series that are like on God's fingernail, tap dancing.
Yeah. Right. Snow globe. Right. Okay, you're right. You know what, Justin? I buy what you're saying.
Pete, a dream woke up by Newhart, wakes up from a dream, and is like undiscovered country. I just dreamed that.
Yeah, that was a good episode of that show.
Yes.
Outlawed number one from Marvel Comics, written by Eve L. Ewing and art by Kim Jacinto. I messed that up. Jacinto.
That was very bad. How surprised you were. Oh, it's like someone poured a cold glass of water down your back.
It is a very easy name to say, and I did it as wrong as possible.
Hey, congrats. Go hard or go home, baby.
So this is leading on to a big champions event where the young heroes of the Marvel Universe have not exactly been outlawed, but kind of been civil warred. Like, there's a lot of strong characterizations of this issue that kick it off. The downside is that it feels like a remake of Civil War to me.
Yes, 100%. I agree with that completely. It felt like a less controversial version of the Stamford incident that set off Civil War, where the New Warriors, who were filming a reality show at the time, blew up and a bunch of people died, including many of the characters. And this felt like that, but a less like, oh, we're not going to kill a bunch of people version of that. But I will say I did like it still.
I disagree. Yes. I think the art makes it so much more different and sets up a different tone. I can understand what you guys are saying, but I didn't get hints of that at all. But I can't say enough about the art and the storytelling in this. It's really great. It's worth it alone. But this is very interesting, and I'm excited to see where this goes.
What I like about it in comparison to the kickoff to Civil War is, with that, the story got so big so quickly, and we didn't get to actually follow the characters who were involved in the incident at all, because many of them died, obviously, but we only saw Speedball become Penance, which nobody liked.
Yeah, we did.
This, I feel like we're going to get to follow all the characters as they sort of sort out what's happening.
It is weird to me, and not to review a comic that doesn't happen in this comic, but one of the end results and one of the things that they're leading into is a new New Warriors series where most of the people who caused Civil War are now instructing the young heroes of the Marvel Universe. And to me, that's fucked up. Like, that's a little, that's insane for Speedball to be like, hey, kids, I was there. Let me tell you about it.
It's don't like scared straight.
Yeah. Don't dress in an Iron Maiden, kids. Don't do it.
But now he's back to being fun Speedball, where it's mostly like cocaine.
DC Comics Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen number nine, I think, written by Matt Fraction and art by Steve Lieber. I gotta tell you, I have been inside for several days and I'm going crazy. So this is another, it's just such a good issue of this comic book. Everyone
it is
just
number nine, BT dubs.
Yeah, so much fun. It intersperses little Jimmy, sort of like Charlie Brown cartoons, with Jimmy Olsen, sort of Calvin and Hobbesy a little bit, with what's happening with Jimmy in the present day, which is he's still reporting for the Daily Planet while on the run from people who want to murder him. There is a thing at the beginning of this comic that I loved it. Like, I love the beginning of this comic. I love the Calvin and Hobbesy thing, but it starts off with Jimmy reporting on Arms Falling Off Boy, who is now just all he wants to do is go to the Bottle City of Kandor amusement park and his whole family wants to go, and they all have different parts of them falling off. And it just cuts to, it's such a cinematic thing, but it cuts to Perry White being like, this is too weird.
Yeah.
Which made me laugh so hard.
What I love about it is Matt Fraction takes, because that's an actual part of DC continuity, the arm fall off boy is, I think, a member of the Legion. And I think he's a species, the entire species of people, their body parts fall off. So, Matt Fraction is just taking something sitting there in the DC universe and being like, yeah, you think you're just going to make this up and not have me make fun of it? Here you go.
There's also such a crazy throwaway joke in there where Jimmy is reporting from the Bottle City of Kandor, which I guess, I don't know if this actually happened in continuity or he just mentioned this, but Kandor grew back to normal size and is in middle America somewhere. Jimmy very casually mentions that in the Bottle City of Kandor, there was a smaller shrunk bottle that was just full of Kandorian snakes, Kryptonian yes. snakes, which yeah. is just this tossed off detail that, again, is just such a funny joke.
Very funny. The other thing I loved, the last story is Jimmy Scuba. Sorry, do you want
to
say that?
Pete, is this what you wanted to talk about?
Well, no, I wanted to be able to talk a little bit about the comic. You guys are having fun going back and forth, but
we are having a good time. Go ahead, Pete. Have fun with us.
Pete, get in the mix here. It's your turn.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. The little Oceans is fun.
And now it's
fun.
Time for a little section we like to call Pete's Turn.
Pete's turn, party time, Pete's turn.
No, seriously, go ahead, Pete.
I honestly want to hear you just cut me off three times.
It's fine.
That's the theme song to Pete's Turn. I'm so sorry. We have to. We
cut
put that
you
in
off
the program
one time,
notes.
Shame on you. Cut you off two times, shame on us. Cut you off three times, we win.
Pete, what did you think of this comic book? Jimmy Olsen's comic book.
Little Olsen's was fun, but other than that, it was a piece of shit.
You made us stop so you could say that.
Why did you wait to say that?
Wow. You guys are having so fun jerking each other off, so I didn't want to interrupt.
You did want to interrupt, and you did see you hated the comic. Oh, man. And that has been Pete's Turn. Pete's Turn. What I was going to say, I liked the last, the joke of in the last story where Jimmy Olsen swims up in a scuba suit, takes it off. Very
that was
John,
awful
James,
story.
James
there was
Bondian
no point
way.
To that.
White tuxedo underneath, goes, plays poker with Lex Luthor, is bad at it. Very funny. And then he walks out and takes the tux off, scuba suit underneath.
Yeah,
very fun.
Very good. It's all just leading into bits while very occasionally seating in the plot. It's so much fun. Have a little fun, Pete. Come on, live a little. No like way. The live people do in Image Comics Tartarus number 2, written by Johnny Christmas and art by Jack T. Cole. There's a backup story Johnny called Christmas. Life, written by Stephanie Cook, and art and letters by Megan Huang. Now, I mean, I think I love the first issue of this. I don't know. Yes. I don't remember what our consensus was, but like, I think at the very least, we thought it was beautiful and insane.
Yeah. I think Pete said he liked the little Tartarus stuff, but the rest was a piece of shit.
I would like to say that the life thing was really awesome as well. Before we start talking about
the backup.
We could talk about the backup first. So this is a mostly wordless backup that shows... just as exactly what it says, like a whole life cycle. I agree. I thought this was a fantastic short story.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's very powerful, really well done. It was just really great.
Yeah. The main story is picking up where we left off the last issue. There's a badass woman fought her way out of a prison under the ground, a.k.a. Tartarus. She gets out there, is defeated, but she has a daughter, I believe, who survives, essentially gets framed for her crimes, or they believe she's a criminal in a similar way. And this picks up with her escaping and trying to get out away from this planet, away from Tartarus. The art, to me, continues to be the standout here. Just the designs are superb.
So great.
Sort of psychedelic, like I think we talked about last time, like Mobius-influenced art. And yeah, I agree. It's very cool.
Yeah. Also, they do a really good job of like storytelling within the panel. There's like little circles, little things that highlight things that the characters are doing. It's really great.
Yeah. Next one to talk about another sci-fi book, Ascender number 10 from Image Comics by Jeff Lemire and Dustin Wind Storytellers. This is, as we mentioned, every issue, but it's picking up on Descender. It's leading to a magic world instead of a sci-fi world. We've been following this little girl who is the daughter of two of the main characters from the Ascender series, who's trying to make her way through this magical world. She got separated from her dad previously, thinks that he's dead, and that's where we're picking up. Oh my God, this was so good, and I think we'll probably spoil the last page, but the last page made me gasp with joy.
I know I just said this, but tears filled my eyes. Maybe I'm feeling emotional, but this, I can't believe the reveal of what happens on the last page, which is just a character showing up, made me like so emotional. But like, man, this every issue of this comic is so good. So many great emotional moments, really well drawn by Dustin Wen.
Last page aside, the whole like mom dad thing, kill me so I don't turn into a mindless vampire, so powerful. I'm surprised that wasn't the thing that moved
in this magic world. The mom has been she's a cyborg. She's been turned into a vampire, so she's a vampire cyborg, which is already insane. I will say,
that sounds crazy, especially on the heels of saying this was super emotional, and we're like, so there's this vampire cyborg, and she, but still, it gets there.
Yeah, and as Pete was saying, I would say true love is like trapped in a cage. She ends up feeding on blood, getting herself back for a little bit. And he's like, come on, we got to go save our daughter. Let's go do it. And she's like, no, I'm just going to get hungry again and I'm going to lose myself. You have to kill me. And like you were saying, it's just so emotional and gets to the core. Dustin Wynn's art, the way that he draws the characters and the ways that he lays things out is so stunning and cinematic as well. It's wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a hell of a choice to make.
This book is great, and we're going to take a break from this and pick it up right afterwards. Hey, Alex here. Remember that feeling when you'd subscribe to comics, get one in the mail, and it felt like you were receiving solid gold? Well, what if you could get that feeling, but with actual gold? Thanks to this week's sponsor, Acre, you can. Acre is the new subscription platform for gold. Acre lets you make small monthly payments and then sends gold straight to your doorstep every few months. You subscribe to comics, right? And maybe someday you'll sell them if the paper doesn't dissolve and the staples don't fall out. It's expensive, unlike Acre, which is affordable. You don't have to pay out of your pocket all at once. It's convenient. Just set up the subscription and forget about it. And you will get, no joke, physical gold bars mailed to your doorstep. Acre-branded gold is of the highest quality, designed in California and minted in Switzerland, my favorite state and favorite country, respectively. It's safe and simple with gorgeous packaging and excellent customer service. And here's how it works. You subscribe for just $50 a month. That's right, no need to break the bank. Start buying gold for just $50 a month, and there's even a $30 per month option. Even less breaking of the bank. Then you watch your gold grow. It's like watching that stack of unread comics grow dangerously next to your bed. Except guess what? Acre will keep you updated on your gold stash as you make progress. And once your gold stash reaches the price of 2.5 grams Acre gold bar, they will discreetly ship you your gold. Most of all, you're in control. You can easily cancel or modify your plan to suit your needs at any time. No epic crossovers where you have to buy all the issues. Just gold, gold, gold. Find out more by going to the link in our show notes and start your Acre Gold subscription today. All right, back for the break with Dr. Tomorrow, number 2 from Valiant Comics. This is written by Alejandro Arbona and art by Jim Tao. I think we liked the first issue pretty well.
Wait, I just want to say before we move into the next comic, I would just say what a nice break that was. I feel so refreshed.
Was that good?
Do you feel
it's nice to kind of walk away a little bit, you know, get refreshed and then come back. You know?
Yeah, for those of you who are listening, we took a full week off during that break and really thought about everything we'd done. Really want to recontextualize ourselves. And
think about the rest of these titles. Think about, we're going to go back and we're going to re-review all of the comics that we did in the first half of the second half of the show.
Smarter, pithier reviews.
What comic are we talking about again?
Great question, Pete. Thanks for asking. Dr. Tomorrow number two, now from Valiant Comics. So in the first issue of this comic, a character named Dr. Tomorrow traveled to an alternate reality where he recruited a younger version of himself to help him battle an evil guy named Hadrian, who had also come to this universe. This issue, we get a lot more explanation about it. They muck it up with a bunch of time walkers who we've seen previously in the Valiant universe. I enjoyed this. I thought this was a lot of fun, and I think I liked it better than the first issue.
I liked it better, but I'm sort of still waiting for the other shoe to drop here. It feels like Dr. Tomorrow seems like a good guy, but it also, this plan doesn't make sense. Something is wrong here, and I just think it's so odd that the two full issues have gone by and there's been no tip, like, is Dr. Tomorrow a villain? Because something's up here.
I really like this. I also think it's interesting the way they deal with kind of like, if your self came back from the future, was like, hey, we've got to go do this thing. It's like, sure, but you came to my timeline, and I got a baseball game. And that's kind of important to me. You know, so I liked how they're dealing with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, come get me when in, like, 20 years when, like, the quarantine is here and I'm not busy.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I'll come help you. I'll come fly around.
I agree with you, Justin. It definitely feels like he's a villain. He's working with Hadrian, and we're going to find that out pretty soon. I don't know why it doesn't, like, there's no plot thing that indicates that, but it just, it feels like that.
Throughout. It feels that way, yes.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Next up from Boombox, Wicked Things number one, created and written by John Allison, art by Max Sarin. I love this book.
Of course I did.
Well, this is... I feel like we've been reading a lot of John Allison stuff. I think he does, oh my gosh, I'm forgetting what it is. It's like Mercy Road or something. It's about the Satanists living in that small town.
Love that book.
And a couple of other things. This is about a teen detective who's a little more goth than Nancy Drew, but she's about that age, who ends up going to the Teen Detective Award show and, of course, gets embroiled in a murder. The characters are just so much fun in here. I love the situations, love the art. I cannot wait to read more of this.
Yeah, I really like this as well. It was so interesting. It almost, and I mean this as a compliment, other people might take it as an insult. It felt like a really good improv show where, like, where each thing was a world was established and each move felt original and odd and funny, and it felt like each scene had a little, like, a game to it, and then it moved through before we get to the inevitable murder and how that's going to be a fun thing for this character to be in. Really fresh storytelling. Really liked it.
Yeah, I really liked the art and the storytelling. And it's kind of like, okay, fish out of water type of thing. But I liked all the choices, and I really was impressed with it. Also, I'm dying to know what's in the box. What's in the box?
Oh, she's holding a box at some point later in the issue?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Okay. Yeah, she gets a gift. The little red box. What's in the box?
We'll find out.
Indeed.
Great book. Definitely pick it up if you're looking to get on board with something new and fun. From Dark Horse Comics, here's another number one. Starship Down, number one. Story by Justin Giampiola and art by Andrew Moody. This is about a scientist called to a remote Arctic location. Never a good idea when you're a scientist in a sci-fi story.
Yeah, never go.
Gets there.
Unless it's like a penguin thing, don't go to the Arctic.
Yeah. You got to, when they give you a call, they're like, hey, we got something, you're not going to believe this. You got to ask, is this a penguin thing? And if they say no, you say, thank you so much, have a lovely day.
Yeah. Please remember to call me when a penguin thing comes up.
This is one of those books that unfortunately is spoiled earlier in the book, which is disappointing. Like, they showed the spacecraft reveal early on, so when you see it, it's not, because the character's like, holy shit, and you're like, oh, that thing we saw on the letters page, oh yeah, that, yeah, cool.
In the letters page?
Well, they revealed the ship early on in the book. It was like,
oh, you mean in the credits page? Not
credits page.
You flipped to the end.
Sorry,
and you saw,
fuck,
okay,
you, you, no, fucking, no, fuck.
Also, they kind of revealed it in the title, which is Starship Down.
Right.
I thought it was Watership Down, but for space.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. For space.
It's about rabbits eventually. This definitely feels like an opening chapter to me. I mean, I'm curious to see where they go from it from here, but it does take a while, to Pete's point, getting to that reveal of the spaceship. There is another reveal that happens after that, but I think the art is good. If you are into that sort of Arctic, disturbing sci-fi adventure type thing, it's definitely heading down that road. So that'll be fun to read, I think, as things slowly start to fall apart. But again, right now it's like, this is the first 10 minutes of the movie. Let's see when we start getting to the action.
Right. Ooh. But it's in a comic book form.
Right. Next one to talk about from Marvel Comics, Iron Age 2020, number one, written by Tom DeFalco, Fonda Lee, and Christopher Cantwell. Art by Nick Roche, Damian Cusciero, and Matt Harack. This is picking up on the current Iron Man 2020 arc, where Arno Stark is trying to quell a robot rebellion. This is dealing with three different tales from the robot rebellion. I don't quite get this whole robot rebellion thing, to be honest with you, but I thought these stories were fun.
Robots evolve and then kill humans.
I don't know. It's like if your precious iPhone all of a sudden was like, oh, I'm not going to do your phone calls and your little texts and look up your pornography
anymore.
I
would fucking kill it.
Well, okay.
Well, if it kills you first, you wouldn't.
What?
Do you guys get this? What do you think about this?
I mean, I think I understand what you mean. It's a little confusing, I guess, what is happening. And this issue was even more confusing at points. I think the middle story has a second, more evil robot revolution starting. That they then defeat, but then the one robot comes back. And so I do think it's a little bit in the weeds. I will say I really like Machine Man. And there's a great panel in this of him like sort of flying into action in the first story, which I thought was really cool. And in general, I like the idea of this AI versus humans fight. I just think Arno Stark isn't enough of a character that we want to root for. It's hard to tell whose side we're on. Yeah. Because the robots seem more fun right now.
The cat story was great. Other than that, I didn't really like it. I just think it's one of those things where it's like, in the description, it says Tony Stark revealed to the world that he is AI. Well, then I don't care about you. If you're dead, you're in your AI. It's like, nah, you died, man. You don't get to get your story
continued. Yeah, that's real cool. Once people die, you don't care about them anymore. You're like, Pete, you've moved on.
Well, right? I don't care about an AI version of Tony Stark, you know, and I also don't care about his adopted brother. So this is like a hard sell to begin with, and they didn't win me over.
And yet you run a fan blog for Abraham Lincoln in the Hall of Presidents down in Disney World. So what the fuck is that about?
It's a small world after all.
Yeah, there you go. Gotcha. I forgot about the cat story, actually. I thought that was great. So I kind of take back what I said a little bit. This is about the cat that used to run Tony Stark's company, who now doesn't have an AI collar anymore, just kind of wanders through town a little bit. Super fun. Super fun art. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
That was good.
Let's move into our final block, which, as always, is our Jamestown of the Fourth block. Kicking it off with Batman number 91 from DC Comics, written by Jamestown of the Fourth. Art by Rafael Albuquerque, Jorge Jimenez, and Carlo Pagulian and Danny Mickey. I cannot.
Good.
Again, been a very long couple of days. I apologize to everybody out there for banging
Ride it
names.
Out. Nailed it.
So this is picking up on dual threats to Batman. Actually, so many threats to Batman at the same time. There is a character named the Designer who was hired a very long time ago by the Riddler, Penguin, Catwoman, and Joker, I think was the fourth person.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. To come up with a plan to destroy Batman once and for all. That got activated using four assassins who have attacked Gotham City. Right now, Batman is mano a mano with Deathstroke. Meanwhile, the Joker
is mano a mano.
Mano a mano. Sorry. Right now, the Joker is running his own thing that's going on in the background, while the Designer is trying to design Batman, and Harley Quinn and Catwoman are trying to help Batman at the same time. There are so many things going on, but they balance it perfectly in this story.
Yeah. It's really smartly done. I love the opening page is great. Oh, really lays out what's happening here about the Joker's talking to a bartender in a place he's like killed everybody in. And he's just walking us through the story about how different people walk in to meet the devil, who's the designer here, and have a different desire. And it's very smart.
Yeah, I really like the opening. And I think it's but what's crazy is we know the Joker and we don't know the designer. So it's kind of like this diner is doing his master kind of plan. But I care less about that because I'm more curious what the Joker has going on.
Well, I think that's the point. I think that's what he's doing is he being James Tynion is layering in there.
The fourth.
Yeah, is he has Batman so focused on the designer that the Joker is getting to build and build his plans in the background. And ultimately, I mean, we'll see what happens. Either it all comes crashing together or Batman is like, yeah, I took down the designer and oh shit, I missed what Joker was doing in the background here.
Yeah.
And now Gotham is totally screwed. And either way, Batman is just, he's going to lose. Like he is set up to lose.
No way. No way.
Well, he's set up to lose, and that's such a great position to have him in a story.
Now, this book's going to be called Designer pretty soon.
I love it.
Designer's going to be dating Catwoman.
This is great. Last one to talk about, continuing our James Tynion block, Something is Killing the Children, number 5 from Boom Studios, written by James Tynion the Fourth, art by Werther Del Adaria. This is kicking off the second arc of the title, where there is a monster hunter in a small town. She thought she killed the only monster in the town that was killing the children, but it turns out there's a couple more there, and not only do we find out more about what's going on in the town and what's going on going forward, but also about the organization that she may or may not be working for in the background. This is great. Just the mythology of this is great. The designs are great. The art is beautiful. I love it.
I agree. The art is so nice here, and it really syncs up well with a TV show I've been watching called The Outsider on HBO that just wrapped up. Very similar tone and vibes to that. So if you like that show, I think you'll really like this comic book.
Yeah, I can't say enough about the art and the storytelling. This really moves and does a great job of like revealing things as you go in a creative way. Also, sometimes you got to stop and color with kids. You know, it's a touching moment.
Yeah. Absolutely. If you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Just kidding. We don't do a live show right now.
Nice. We do a live show just on the internet, yes. Alex. And it's at the same time.
Yeah, so we are actually streaming our show every Tuesday at 7 p.m., at least for the foreseeable future, to both Crowdcast and also to YouTube on our YouTube channel, Comic Book Club 5 YouTube channel, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show, comicbookclublive.com to check out this podcast and many more. And you know what? We're not going to see you at the comic book shop because nobody's lit outside of their houses. Yeah.
That's true. Pete, it's Pete's turn. Finish up.
Pete's turn.
Deuces.